not adjust your radio frequency. This is not a test. This is the Artist First Network.
Cool. Welcome to another broadcast of Bigfoot Central on the Artist First Radio Network. We welcome your questions and comments. Hit us up at dj@artistfirst.com. And let's turn things right over to our co-hosts, MK Davis and Don Monroe. Take it away, gentlemen.
Hey, everybody. I hope everybody can hear me tonight plainly because I have a really bad cold and my voice has just been very, very iffy. I hope it holds up tonight. Don, where you at?
Looks like MK and I both are kind of down. I'm out in the gold fields looking for gold and petroglyphs both at this time. I'm interested in both. It's 110 degrees in California. I just covered most of the state. And my feet are still swollen big from my spider bite situation, 5 months old. I'm hoping to be here next month if I can be. But we're doing fine.
I've heard of that, Don. I've heard of when you get hot, really hot, that venom that's in your body reactivates. It happened to a fellow I worked with who got bit by a copperhead, and like 3 or 4 months later after he recovered, he got really hot during the first heat spell, and he almost died. I mean, they had to rush him to the hospital. The venom just reactivated.
I'm concerned myself a little bit today, but I'm puffed up like a puppy, you know. But I'm not complaining on the air, but people get watch out for spiders, man. These guys are bad, I'll tell you what. I've been going since March, and I've been doing anyway what I shouldn't be doing, but I'm doing it. And I got to cut that out, I guess, a little bit. Go back to Montana where I belong. Anyway, let's get the show on going here. MK's got a lot to tell you on that, I'm sure.
Well, yeah, I've got kind of a continuation thing here. If you go to the Artist First homepage and click on the Bigfoot Central button down there on the left side, it'll take you to the on-air page and the Bigfoot Central on-air page, and we have a GIF file up there, right there in the front. It's called Scamper. Now, this is a file here that you might remember this scene if you kept up with my YouTube postings. I got a link there right above it that you can go and watch a YouTube of this very same scene. And this tree there on the right, apparently a juvenile Bigfoot or Sasquatch goes up that tree and shakes the living daylights out of it and hollers like an owl, or attempts to holler like an owl. It's rather a lame imitation of an owl. Then he comes back down. Well, a little bit later in the clip, I was able to get some detail there in the darker areas. This was taken like dark 30, if you're familiar. I mean, that's just after the sun sets, and it's pretty a low amount of ambient light there. But nevertheless, it did record the little fella. Going off to the left side of the frame, you'll see over on the left-hand, lower left-hand corner there, you'll see the little guy scamper, a couple of three, little movements there. And that's him going off in that direction after the tree shake. And he's kind of knuckle-walking, actually, or crawling, or whatever you want to call it. He's not up bipedal at all. It's been amazing to me as I poured over these videos. These videos all came from a certain area of the United States down here in the Deep South, and they continue to give things that are unexpected. And this is one of them. I really did not expect to be able to see the little fella down here in this dark area like that, but there he is. It took some filtration, and it took some, working with the video. Now, if you look at the very center of the GIF file as it runs, you'll see a tree, a big tall tree, kind of off to the left of center. Well, if you move about an inch or inch and a half to the right of there, you'll see very quickly a little black object move right and left as the GIF file oscillates. And that perhaps might be another one out in that open field, back on further away behind it, way out there. As my understanding is of this area, is that they were not there all the time. that they circulated in and out of that area. So, you know, there were long periods of time when you would not record anything. And then when they did show up, there would be a lot of activity. So because it was more than one, it was a clan or something like a clan that were together. So over a period of years, the people who took the video, and I say people, not person, the people who took the video, they were able to learn enough about it that they could successfully put their cameras in these likely places at the right time and get some rather astounding things on them. It's kind of a mixed bag because it's hard work to pour over a six-hour videotape of the same scene. And if you blink or if you go get a cup of coffee or whatever, a Bigfoot event may not last but about 20 or 30 seconds.
You know, and Jason, to substantiate that statement about them not being there all the time, I was in that area quite a bit years ago, a few years ago, and I covered a lot of the country in there. And the food chain for them isn't really everywhere. So they have to come and go quite a bit to where it's at. And that particular forested area down there, that swampy area, there's not a lot of food everywhere. But there are places that are food. So they do go around in kind of a chain circle of hunter-gatherers. So that's true. It wouldn't be in one place too long.
Yeah. You know, we're not the first people to see these videos. It was my first time to see them, most of them. These people were not, how you say, they were not, they did not care particularly for, you know, being, you know, out there in front publicly. So, you know, they were taking these videos basically for their own edification, you know. So, you know, some of them did get seen here and there and continue to do so, but not nearly all of them. I had probably over 50 video cassette tapes to view, most of them 6 hours long, you know. So even the people who took them did not know completely what was on them because it is very difficult to sit down for 6 hours and watch a tape of the same scene. So lots can be missed. And sometimes I found things that I missed the first time around. So there you see the little guy on the left there kind of scooting along there. He wasn't picked up immediately. He was only picked up with a lot of effort, you know, in enhancement of the video to brighten it up. Those were very dark areas. So, you know, video, in order to put that kind of an effort into a videotape, you got to believe that there's something might be on it or you wouldn't want to be wasting your time and effort. So after watching the link there, after watching the, if you watch the link above the scamper thing, you'll see the little guy shake that tree, that really, really, really violently shake it. So, you know, you know that it's something worthwhile on it. And I've actually been to the area, and I photographed that tree. And that tree is like a slow-growing cedar. It's not much bigger now than it was when this was taken, which was around 10 years ago. So, you know, I know what size it must have been, you know, to be able to reach that area of the tree way up top. If I went up there, I would pull the tree over. There's no question about it. It's something that's not that big. It's maybe 75 pounds max, but big enough to violently shake it and to holler. So that made me want to look at every ounce, every frame, every square inch of anything available in this event. So there you go. The results are, you got the little guy there scampering there on the left side along the ground. So it's not likely that if anybody were going to pull off a hoax that they would have someone scamper in total darkness when they would, to them, I'm sure it would seem futile to do that because it wouldn't pick up with the video camera. It's only with technology that you were able to get that out of there. So, you know, these are VHS cassettes. They're not digital. They're not digital files. So they're analog. That's a good thing. It's a little older technology, but it's a little more difficult to manipulate. So it's not as likely to have been manipulated, you know, in the camera or in a process of with a computer or something like that. So I just wanted to bring that out. And these tapes were also had a lot of audio whenever things got really dark and you couldn't pick up any video at all. There was still a good bit of audio, and I'm a picture man, so I'm not an audio expert in anything. But some of the things were so compelling that, you know, I just felt like, you know, that people needed to at least listen to them. And there are people who did hear them, and they say the richness of the sound and the depth of the sound is, I mean, it just seems like it would be very difficult for the average person. It would have to be a really huge chest to kind of thrust it out there like that or project it out there. Now, you were talking about Scott. Playing something rather than having somebody just click on it. What were you referring to?
Well, it was the larger the two audio files you had sent.
Yeah, okay. Now, would it be like near infrasound?
Yes. I'm not, let me flip back over to that section. Hang on a second. My computer's running slow as usual. Bear with me a second, or my computer's doing too many things at once. There we go. Tape modified. Al, give me a minute. I'll get right back to you.
Okay, it's no problem. I want to explain a little bit about the title of it, Near Infrasound. And basically, when I went over these things and then went back over a second time, I turned the volume up, and I could barely hear something in the background. And when I kept on bringing up the volume and amplifying, removing the hiss and and cleaning up the file, it would actually be something produced by the subject in the film, but so low that it was hardly perceptible to the ear. And that's why I call it near infrasound. Infrasound would be something below the level of the human ear and its capability of listening to it. But this is not quite there. It's very near it, and some of it was quite astounding audio. So you know that's why I posted this up here, a couple of them, but there's lots of them, and it's something that the camera just picked up in the night as it ran, and it ran continually. So anything passing by there, if it said or spoke or if it growled or uttered anything, the mic would pick it up. So you know it's
okay. MK,
go ahead.
I do have both of them, and right, one of them it says near infrasound, and I have that queued up. If you want me to play that now,
yeah, go ahead.
Okay, here we go. And there it is.
Okay, I'm not sure. I kind of heard it in spotty sounding. And it may have been just the cell phone connection I got here. But at any rate, someone can listen to it there by clicking on it as well and downloading it. So it's there. It's what it is. Basically, that is amplified around 1,200%. And you can hear a guy whisper under his breath. Now there was somebody actually out there when this occurred, and they say just simply the words, and pardon my French, oh shit. And then there's a huge growl that's deep, rumbling, and then that's the end of it. But if you played it at normal audio at 100, which everything plays at on my program, you would barely hear something, but you wouldn't hear it very clearly at all. It would be so low. You know, this person muttered this kind of under his breath. So, you know, it's something going on, though, that got his attention. And then, consequently, you know, it got the attention of all of us through the camera. So I thought you'd like to hear that. Now, the other one, Hairy Legs, Short, Louder. You want to try to play that one?
Yes, let me cue. Yep, it's going to play. Here we go. That was it.
Yeah, I'll tell you what. Now that's, you know, as far as the richness of the sound and the bass that's there, that's probably something for audio experts to take a look at and see if they can determine about it. But, you know, I'm certainly not an expert in audio, but I certainly think that I'm listening to something that's a little more on the lower end of the capability, you know, people to produce. You know, it's got a tone and richness that seems kind of unique. There goes back to, you know, what do you consider good evidence? You know, I guess, you know, there's nothing that is surefire. Nothing has been put on the books yet. But there is good and better and worse stuff. And to me, this stuff is certainly on par with the better stuff that's out there. You know, whatever occurred in this area intermittently over the years, they were able to get some of it, at least some of it on video, some of it on audio, and that's quite an accomplishment. These things are very difficult to get near, very difficult to get close to. It took a lot of coaxing. I say coaxing with a C. I'm making sure I don't get misunderstood. The way they were able to do it, and it's my understanding, is that over a period of time, they began to recognize the hollers, the hoots, the sounds that they made, and they knew when they were there. And so if you listen to the YouTube link up there, you'll hear that little guy holler, and it's kind of distinctive. So basically what they would do is take them food. I don't know any way you can get next to anything quicker than giving them something to eat, you know, that they don't have to work for. So this didn't happen overnight. It just developed over a period of time. And so whenever these things would come around, when they made their circuit through the area and came back through, they would go up, climb a tree and holler and shake the tree, and then they would know they were there, and they would bring food out. And you can see the excitement in this little guy right here, if you watch the video there. This little guy that's scampering on the ground, man, it's like he can't wait to get wrap himself around some good eating. And these weren't just, you know, dog food. This was prepared meals. So, you know, this happened over a period of time, and so they were able to get these videos. simply in a non-intrusive way, a non-invasive way, and non-violent or whatever you want to call it. They just gave them food, just set it out there. They didn't hang around. They leave cameras going, but they wouldn't hang around themselves, and let the cameras do the recording. Very, very smartly done.
I might add here, MK, I was told by those people at what time that they noticed after the meals were eaten, they had a relativity of being very, actually kind of neat about their leavings. They weren't destructive in the way a lot of people are, unless things kind of went orderly a little bit. It's been a pattern I noticed over my own experience, too, a lot of times.
And Don, you and I both have learned, going into the Bluff Creek area, the last two times that I went in there, we hiked in. And it's a big difference as to what you're able to see hiking compared to what you're able to see driving vehicles in.
Oh, absolutely.
If you don't just absolutely run them off, with your behavior, but if you just kind of go in a very, undisturbing type of way, leave them something to eat, put a camera on it, and leave. You might be surprised at what you get on there.
I've been lost cameras before. I left cameras before and they've disappeared. So I don't know what takes place is interesting,
Well, they seem to know that a camera is something of special interest. Now, that's not. I've got a video that I haven't yet posted that seems to show that where they actually come around behind the camera and get a stick and they tap the lens. The camera with a stick and just play with it. I don't know, if they fully appreciate that it's recording their image or not, but they certainly do realize that someone put it up there with a lot of care. As far as how smart a Sasquatch or a Bigfoot is, I don't really know. I hate to put any kind of limitations on them because I don't really know. But this scene you see here could play itself out over and over again in numerous places across the United States. Up in the region of Ohio, up there where Scott is, there are spots up there that have similar things going on. If they're able to employ techniques like this, or maybe a technique tailored to what the conditions are there, maybe they can get something on film of that. Bluff Creek, California is not the only place, is what I'm saying, or Washington State, which is the number one state in Bigfoot sightings. I think that, with the right amount of effort and the right conditions, similar things to what you see here could be done again. It could be repeated over and over.
They have some patterns of humanity, too. I won't go into detail, but they have a neatness about them over the years I've been doing this. It's ironic how they leave things sort of orderly, kind of like, you might say. Put the caps back in the bottles, or what do they do? They put things back on, or they'll lay certain things in certain lineup, rows, or whatever you want to say after they leave. So, yeah, it's relative to us. Many ways, they have an intelligence factor that's kind of like, it's got a plan to it, kind of like an orderly plan, like we do. We throw a rock left or right, they do too. They have a certain way of throwing a rock or whatever it is, too. It's kind of like their own.
Yeah, well, these particular guys, somebody near that area threw a bunch of tires out off a bridge, and these guys found them, and they were having like the time of their life with playing with these tires. I mean, they seemed to be obsessed by the tires. So the researchers realized that they were moving these tires around at night, so they chained them all together. And buddy, when they did that, you wouldn't believe the ruckus. I mean, it was dark, but the audio, my gosh. I mean, it really ticked them off. I mean, they were mad. It was kind of a nightly or weekly or nightly thing, where the Bigfoot researchers realized how much this meant to them, so they began to kind of try to fool around with it a little bit, see if they could get a response. And it ended up kind of developing into a situation where they actually chained the tires together and pulled them up into a tree and hung them way up high in a tree. And At night, these guys proceeded to dismantle the tree. They took the entire tree down to the ground and retrieved those tires, although they could not break the chain to get them. So it's stuff like that went on, you know, for around 4 years, around a decade ago. And a decade ago, at that time, the general line of thought about Bigfoot was that it was Gigantopithecus, a large extinct ape. So what we're seeing there happening there, and what the researchers were seeing, were characteristics that certainly were not ape-like. They seemed to be on the more intelligent end than an ape, functioning more as a human than an ape, or at least in some fashion. So it does not mean that we know what they are. It means that it sort of points in the direction of what they are.
All animals and man likes games, and man, they're the difference we are. Human beings like games of all kinds of sort of animals, and even dogs, you know. So we get into this kind of thinking, it's not too far relative from us.
Well, there are the Indians, the Native Americans of old, said that they were tricksters, that they got a big kick out of pranking people and fooling them and scaring them, you know, that type thing. But you know, they really just got a laugh out of it, and I can kind of see it in certain ones of these videos where they did things in the night, you know, that might scare somebody.
Well, don't you think a sense of humor has the indications of intellect? I mean, if you have an intellect that has a sense of humor, usually you're a little more advanced than somebody who hasn't got one. I mean, Cyropus isn't really human, to my estimation. Without a sense of humor, you haven't got much going for you. Well, you guys seem to have a heck of a sense of humor in many things I can tell you about, too, also add to it, but I won't get into that. They do have a sense of humor of how they respond.
Hey, Scott, if I played a file over the phone, do you think it would come in okay?
I'll try to dial it up as best I can. Go ahead.
Well, I'm going to play this. This is already pretty loud. This happened in total darkness. It has video, but there's nothing on the video. And try as I might, I couldn't rescue anything out of it because there was not any even ambient light there. But you'll hear, what you're going to hear is this thing holler out, and it's going to shake some tin and holler some more. And you just might give you an idea of how much they could scare you if they wanted to. Here we go. I'll give it just a minute. All you can hear is the footprints right now. Wind blows. Here we go. It's fixed to happen. This is going to shake. It's going to shake some tin. You know, I don't know about how other people feel, but if I heard something like that, you know, in the night, it would get to me, I would imagine. Could you hear that, Don?
Yeah. I have a hard time with it. I don't know what to say about it because people, most will say it's a monkey. It's not. If anybody's traveled the world and heard monkeys and macaques, things like that in the woods and or any other kinds, they know that that's not that. And a great ape don't sound like that either, really. But you can't say it's human beings either. You know, it's hard to say, but that does.
Well, I mean, it's I guess you can make an argument, you know, for a lot of different ways. But I mean, the evidence is rather incomplete, you know.
Yeah, right.
If you really want it to be this or that, you can kind of just, you know, skew it that way by just picking out the evidence that you want to present. But it's if you look at the entire body as a whole, it's kind of inconclusive.
Go ahead. Okay, you know these sounds you hear that are classical and they're, you know, typical, they say, of soft voice sounds that people universally hear and denote to be that. They aren't necessarily the only prototype there are. I mean, there's many things I've heard that I've never talked about on here, but and some of them are even mumbling, and sometimes in dark places, in caverns, and so on. And you know, and on people's front porches, have been told stories like this too at nighttime when they go on the front porch to take dog food. Anyway, so there's different kinds of sounds. I know three or four of them. I won't make them on here and get a horse trying to do it. But they aren't all the same at all, and they're more way away from apes and gorillas than they are in their favor, how you say it. So I just got to say, we don't know what these creatures actually amount to entirely, so the vocal part is really up for grabs, but they have got a definitely a thing they're saying that's different than our own self. It has some kind of vocalization of notes, you might say. If you're a person in music, you can almost find out what their range was, you see what I mean?
Yeah, you know, these tapes are like 10 years old, and I thought to myself, you know, well, I've got a pretty good range in my voice, and I was able to reach the pitches on some of them, but these deeper ones, like this one I play here, I couldn't touch that. And the one there, the hairy leg short louder tape, I couldn't touch that one either. It's just too low and too out there. It's a sound that's almost projected.
There probably is somewhere in research done somewhere in zoos and those kind of things, somewhere on video or I say audio, they could probably tell you what range ranges apes and gorillas can reach. There is a generality in all these things, orangutans included, and you know all these things they have out there. And even elk, you know, when elk calls, we call them in the fall in Montana, we call the elk in. You got certain ranges you got to reach, and that's all. You don't go beyond that, you throw it out. So you know, moose same way, everything's that way.
So are you saying that the elk can tell the difference?
Yeah, they sure can. It's open a duck. I mean, as smart as we are, we're not that smarty smart. You know what I mean? You got to know what you're doing, and you got to know when to stop and when to start and how to do it, what day of the month, who's doing what. It's not just making a lot of sounds, make the effort. It's the vocalization limit to how far, how much of a thing you can put out there to them.
Well, you know, it's like you said, in the process of pouring over these tapes, you know, and you're thinking, you know, well, could this be somebody just hoaxing? You know, and of course, you know, the logical thing to think is that it must be a hoax. That's the logical thing, and because it's an absurdity to think that there's something like a Bigfoot or Sasquatch living out there, you know. But when you hear things that are a little bit outside of the realm of possibilities of it being a human or a hoaxer, you know, this is a little too much voice. It's a little too much depth. It's a little much power.
As an abstract example, I was traveling the last few days with a gold miner who keeps thinking every bird he sees overhead is an eagle or a hawk. A lot of them are buzzards. He couldn't tell the difference of a buzzard, a hawk, and an eagle. He's out in the woods all his life. Overhead, way up tall, you know, flying overhead. And I pointed out a few little things that he could tell right away, and he learned that. But the thing is, so the human being, all of us, have a certain range of learning in the past that is founded, we think so, and we're way off key on what we think we know sometimes about sounds as well. So, you know, we can't just say a dog barking is a certain type of dog.
Right. Say this is way more than things that go bump in the night. You know, when something hollers with that kind of power, you know, it's either a Sasquatch or something like that. I mean, a person can, you know, Enrico Caruso could not do that.
I think I told this once before years ago on here about the sounds you heard in Idaho many years ago, 15 years ago or so, that was in the night as close as 4 or 5 feet away outside of a tent. It was nothing like you ever heard before. And I waited 9 years, I think it was, to get another sound like that told to me by somebody else out of suggestion. It was exactly on key, and it was by a doctor who was a very, very, I would say, trustworthy kind of guy for his deposition. He was also a prospector who had heard the same thing several yards away from him and seen the creature. And it was a bird-like sound in this case, immolating a big bird. And
now, what did you say? When you say bird-like sound, Don, what type of bird? Like a cry or a tweet?
Well, it's like a big cheep. Like, I'll do it one time, like making a horse. Okay, listen now. Cheep, cheep. Like that. Really sounded like that. It was
but loud.
Really loud. It was so loud it had to be guttural from the like right from your belly had to come out of there, you know. It wasn't something was it wasn't done on purpose loud, it was just done normally loud. It was done to indicate there was two separate cheeps, one to the other, outside my tent on shadows. So I didn't see what they were, it was in snow. This happened in Idaho. I wrote about this in my first book, in fact. But guy with me was he was alarmed. I said, "Shut up!" He started sheeping back at him. I said, "They might come back around here and bother us." You know. Anyway, the thing is, these guys have sounds and that they make that are different for different reasons, like we do. They have different kind of reasons to make sounds.
Yeah, I mean, I've heard them imitate on these tapes. I've heard them imitate crows, and I've heard them imitate roosters.
And I was told,
in the owl, yeah, the little guy imitated the owl. But they weren't such good imitators. I mean, it was pretty lame, actually. So, you know, it was pretty easy to tell that it wasn't the real thing. And a crow would fly over, and a crow would do a good crow call, of course, and then you'd hear this real lame sound coming from near the ground trying to imitate it.
MKUltra, the sounds you hear sometimes of crows and where they are done the wrong time of day. When birds roost at night and they don't have a reason to crow, or a raven and so on, they don't have a certain time of night, they don't make any sounds again. But here in the nighttime, you begin to wonder what it is because they have no reason to go to roost. And it's just all birds that way. They make a certain sound, the sun comes up.
Well, you know, Paul Freeman's film, you know, he's approaching that area where the Bigfoot comes out, okay? And then all of a sudden, this crow is calling. And it calls four times real fast in succession. And then within a minute, he films a Bigfoot right there where the calling took place. You know, it kind of makes you believe maybe that it wasn't a crow doing the calling, you know? It's just possible that Bigfoot might communicate in a way that he knows no one else is going to pick up on, you know?
Well, Ray Crowe, you know who Ray Crowe is, everybody does. He got, a few years ago, he was conferring on this kind of thing, and he heard sounds in the northwest up in Washington State that were owl sounds, and they were of an owl type that's not conducive to Washington State. They're more Alaskan owl. And now I tell you how much communication and association they have with other Sasquatches going north of us. Well, even in Idaho and Montana, we have certain kind of wolf sounds up there that are wolves, no doubt about it, coyotes and so on. And once in a while, a sound comes out of the woods that just does not make sense. Well, I've heard these, again, I can't emulate them, but I've heard these, and I know they're not coyotes or wolves in this case. So what are they, see? They're out there doing something, they're communicating with something or themselves or whatever it is.
Well, you know, we all watch those old westerns, and you know the cowboys are sitting there waiting for daybreak for the Indians to attack. And because Indians, quote, would not attack during nighttime, but then they would hear the sound of an owl or a whippoorwill, and they would say, "Well, that's not an owl. That's not a whippoorwill. That's them."
How about the case of Sergeant York in the First World War?
That concept has been around for a long time, but it does make perfect good sense if you're living in the wild to employ those type sounds, at least or someone would know, you know, that hey, you know, be aware someone's in our area, you know. What, maybe four calls of a crow, you know. I would certainly pay attention to it if I heard it and I knew that I was in a situation where something was going on, you know. I guess that's just part of, you know, research, part of, you know, trying to learn something, trying to pick up some knowledge. But at any rate, these people who did this research here, it's a consortium of, I think, four or five, maybe more people. They learned that they could listen for these lame calls, and they knew when they were in the area. So, if you fed them, they'd stay longer. You know,
it's a shame we can't take people with us in the woods and have them be right there when certain things happen, because it'll universally change the whole opinion of everything. And it's just, if you talk about it all you want to, we can do this. But you know, unless you're there sometimes to see what the gold flake looks like in the pan, or or with a bird in the water being, you know, you don't know.
Technologies have changed, Don, and you know that. You know, we have night vision equipment and stuff now, and we have high definition video and that type of thing. But all of the what they were doing there, you know, began, gradually ceased before any of these technologies became available. For their own reasons, not that they wanted them to cease, but they different. You know, life goes on, and a lot of these people were putting their entire weekends and all their spare time and a lot of their spare money into it. And after a while, you know, life sort of steps in. You know, one person was getting a divorce and he had to drop out. Another person had a religious experience and he decided he didn't want to do it anymore because he thought they maybe were evil or something. So he drops out. Another person drops out for another reason. Another person gets sick, you see. So for their own reasons, individually, they began to cease doing this so that the food began to not be cooked or not be prepared and presented. So they began to move through the area, you know, rather quickly rather than hang around. And now they're sort of just passed through once in a while, you know. They're back, you know, like they were, so...
The generations of training is around these creatures out there. They might die off or become aged where they don't even respond, and the young ones don't know how. So you got to retrain, you might say, re-evaluate how to assess all this stuff. And even leaving samples for them and some food samples, and there'll be a period of time passed when you didn't do it, and then they forget about it.
Well, I think sensationalism is something you want to avoid. And these people, these tapes, you know, sat in a box for 10 years, you know. Obviously, they weren't after trying to get sensationalized anything. You know, you have to be careful that you don't, you know, turn into a promoter. You know what I mean? And that sensitive areas like this right here, they may have been on a circuit that these clans passed through for hundreds and hundreds of years, might get disturbed and permanently, you know, shift them over somewhere else, you know, that type of thing. You know, it treated with kid gloves, you know. Don't pressure them. Don't put pressure on them, because if you do, you might not see them again.
Well, mankind is basically very impatient. He wants things right now to happen, and so if they don't happen right now in their particular way, they don't accept it. And why don't I see one? There's a thousand reasons why you don't see one. And it's out there. And, so you got to go out and look sometimes for things.
Yeah, and I feel fortunate, you know, to have worked with some of the very best stuff there is that different people have been able to get, you know, with the Patterson film and now with these videos and some others as well. So, you know.
Well, you mentioned that real quickly here. I happen to know from a recent response, just recently, very much, I mean, just not hours, almost hours ago, days ago, how much effort is being put out in the future here. I won't say who by who or what, but there's a big effort, a big one. It's humongous. Put down the Patterson film as being completely nil and void. Well, you should look at that, I guess, and see what they say. But keep in mind that the truth matters to the people who really want to know, but the rest of them, they want to make a dollar bill. So be careful.
Well, I mean, if it's the same old, I'm not too interested in it. If they can show me something on the film, you know, that implies that it's a hoax, I'm willing to look. But if they're just going to go and get a bunch of people to mean mouth Patterson again, no, I'm not too interested in that. You know, Don, how many people could
I know
get
not.
Out
of
you,
Don? The world at large out there could be naive about who they believe and what they believe, a lot of believe in. So
I could go get a bunch of people to come up and say, I know that Don Monroe, he does this and he does that. And, you know, you can always find people that'll do that. And almost on anybody, too. You know, it's just wide open for that. If they're going to show that it's a hoax, they need to show it by using the film itself. Yeah, and if they can't successfully do that, then they need to just leave it alone.
It's hard sometimes to prove validity. Some things valid, things are hard to prove. Isn't it?
You're going to cross people during your life, Don. I don't care who you are. You're going to cross somebody, and somebody would be willing to come forth and say, I think you're a lowdown, you know, whatever, you know.
Yeah, I like the statement. Sometimes I back it up a little bit sometimes, you know.
it's you can't use that as proof of anything.
You know, you call a guy a name, he's going to back it up. You say you're famous, you want to be, I don't care if you call your horse's patootie, sometimes you got to be one back.
Well, that's why the Patterson film survives to the 21st century, because nobody's been able to use the film itself to disprove it.
Well, hearsay is hearsay. Don't forget that, anybody. It's just hearsay.
Yeah, definitely so. I mean, but at any rate, I'm just about to run out of my voice. Has anybody sent any emails in or anything?
Actually, yes, we have four emails.
Okay.
The first one is, it says, Dear Don Monroe, what about Smokey Crabtree's secret body? Boy, I haven't heard anything about that for a while. Remember when Smokey claimed to have possession
of Smokey Crabtree? I don't really know the man personally, and I know a person who does, and Smokey's been always valid to him. I've heard stories repeatedly about Smokey being a real valid researcher, and I don't really know the answer to that question. I'd like to have seen that, but Smokey don't like me. He's been told, I guess, some things why he wouldn't, and I don't have nothing against him. But Smokey is a researcher that I think he should look at again and ask him himself. Maybe he can call in and tell us about it, because it's been a few years ago now, and it was very controversial for a while, but he claims a real thing. I don't doubt he has something going on.
You know, I had forgotten about that, too, and we had Smokey on twice, and I'd spoken with him privately for several hours on several occasions, but it's been many years ago now, and he sent me some pictures privately that showed a leg. If I recall, it may have been from the around the knee down, and it had been skinned. If I recall correctly, it's been a while, but and he only wanted to show part of it, and he was adamant that he had this thing, and he was going to keep it, and he didn't want Hollywood to get a hold of it. And I had completely forgotten about that.
Well, you know, he's probably a valid person that researches some more things for you if he can do it. Maybe he has that thing still on display. I don't know.
I know his wife has passed away. I think Smokey's wife passed away not too many years ago, so things have changed kind of dramatically for him. That may be why we haven't heard from him.
Well, Smokey, he's welcome here anytime. We've always had a good relationship with him and Artist First, and maybe he'd like to come back on if someone could get word to him.
The invitation to come on and talk about what you have is there. I just wished like 10 years ago that I could have, you know, when this video was shot here, was a lot fresher. You know, I would have liked to have known about this then, and where I could have talked to all the people involved. I've talked to three of the individuals, but not all of them. All of them are not available. So,
you know, just abstractly, I just found about 2 weeks ago, the first time in my life ever, and I studied a lot of petroglyphs. I go where people never go to look for them. And I found one it's not my thing, but it looks like an alien. It really does. And my camera's about still got stolen from me, so I know cameras. I use my cell phone camera, but I'm going to go back and you better and do some research over for a whole week and hike across that range. But anyway, it's the first time I've seen something alien, and I've been asked this question many times. I won't say I know about aliens. I don't. But this one's really making me wonder about this. It looks like it's been burnt into the stone rather than carved like it's been, and it's just almost too much to believe. But
like burnt marks on it or soot?
Well, the whole thing's been burnt into the rock like it's been laser burnt, the whole effigy, the whole face. I can't believe it. And I had a guy with me who was first time ever out like that. And I take first timers a lot of times so I can get some valid opinions, because we found Paleo-Indian evidence right there of the time when the mountain sheep were plentiful in the West. They had many, many sheep out here in the western states years ago, and they killed them off by 1930, pretty much. And there were thousands of them at one time, like buffaloes. Almost not that plentiful, but there were very many of them, and they were killed off. And the early Paleo-Indians, before they had names for tribes, ate them a lot, and afterwards until recent times. But we found in the same area, on the same rift of mountains, this face. I can't get over it.
You know,
I'm for MK to film this for us and show it to you on it.
You know, I was reminded of seeing pictures after Hiroshima. Some of those unfortunate souls who were too close to the blast, their shadows were burned into the stone.
Yeah, I saw that too.
I, you know, it probably just has no connection to, you know, it wasn't, but...
No. But see, that there I just told you is hearsay right now, and people say, oh, darn, it's full of baloney. Well, you know, I probably am in some respects, but this thing here has got me really, really boggled. It changes the whole pitch of who came here first, who's on first, who's on second, you know what I mean? Who's in right field? I begin to wonder sometimes. And, you know, I just showed in there for something interesting in the future. If MK can come out to the West and film that, I'm anxious for him to do it because he's got the cameras and he's got the know-how. There's more to film than just that. I got a lot of stuff in that valley. It's called the Valley of Skulls.
Well, you know, even now, the people are saying, you know, it's a sort of a surge of popularity about alien connections to the origins of people here on Earth, and that maybe actually Bigfoot fits into that connection or fits into that scenario. But if they have a show on the History Channel called Ancient Aliens, if you watch that, you know, they kind of...
Apparently out of my knowledge, too, MK. I just don't know about it. But it sure is interesting to think that maybe we missed a lot, perhaps, in some of these things we're estimating.
Well, I mean, if Bigfoot is us before we became us, you know, they were the original inhabitants of the Earth as far as people goes, and that somehow or another aliens had taken their DNA and spliced it and whatever aliens can do, and we end up being us. That's sort of the scenario that's presented there. And I don't know that it's not true.
I don't kind of go here tonight on aliens either, but this is in my mind. I can't get over it. And I'm actually going back there and get my feet healed up and take a look.
Well, the word alien just means foreign. You know, it's foreign to us. That also, you know, doesn't mean that it's true or not true. But, you know, this is a mighty big universe out there. There's a lot of space out there.
This turns out been laser burned into basalt. I'm going to have to do another flip, I'll tell you what, if it is.
Well, I want to go down there and get pictures of it. If it's burned into basalt, it's something really strong.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. If it is, it's going to be something that I can't analyze. But I did discover that. I'm not the first person to see it, I'm sure, because in the valley where people do go on four-wheelers, and, you know, they see nothing but potato chip sacks, so I don't know what they see, but they pass by every day. And while I was there, four guys go by me, just drive by like, you know, they do, four-wheelers. And it wasn't the place I was going to go. In result, but I found places back in the internet I haven't been, of course, and there's a lot more. And people don't realize what they pass up by just being naive. We're all included in that. And you watch a tide come in and get the tide tables, and you miss the tide sometimes. You don't watch it.
Don, what you want to avoid is not being making the same mistakes over and over. And I think that you and I probably are pretty good at avoiding that. There's an old saying, I don't know if you've ever heard of it, that Einstein originally quoted. He said, another definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over again and each time expecting a different result. you know, we want to, if what we're doing is not working, you know, maybe we ought to change to what we're doing.
Either that or we're all crazy.
You know, real quickly here, I didn't take too much time on this thing, but MK in the field, I got to say, myself, I got to include that. We're very methodical. I'm a really skeptic myself and critic to the last degree. No one realizes that. And I got one kind of scientific way of approaching things. It's very skeptical, but I do see things that are factual, and you cannot deny them. They're there in front of your eyes, no doubt about it. My ants crawling to a print, there's ant pile close by, and it hasn't got there yet. It's pretty fresh. So
maybe next show. I have photographed. It's an object that was dug out of a field in Mexico. It's a little statue, and this statue is kind of Bigfoot looking, and it's got its right hand over its chest, and it's looking up at the sky. So maybe the next show I'll post that up there and let the folks look at that. It's obviously very, very old, and maybe you know it's a. You know, maybe that's what it's depicting. You know, maybe that's these people saw something a long time ago from Skyward Way, you know, that impressed them, you know.
In the Grand Canyon down in Mexico, they have that, like, Grand Canyon comparison real quickly here. I've been there, too. It's absolutely incredible what they believe down there about the Diablo, you know, Espanol. But they really have a lot about that down there and those kind of things in Mexico, central Mexico. It's a lot of stuff. And of course, people are not.
No, we need to make a trip down there, don't we?
We've got to, when you get your guns out first, because you got to shoot your way out.
I will let you do that, okay?
Yeah, I know the area pretty well. A Copper Canyon Run, 1,100 miles to the sea over the highest mountains in North America, in that part of North America, down to Las Mochas. Anybody wants an adventure, take that one, that train. It's a coal train, the old-timers. Anyway, this program is just too short, folks. I just wish I had more time sometime to tell you something, but I don't want to get...
This is a mighty big world and a mighty big universe, and it's awful hard to cover even a fraction of it in an hour, but we had fun to try it, and we'll jump on some
more of it. I've been 2,000 miles in the last 7 days, MK. 2,000 miles across California. 2,000 miles up and down the whole darn state. The last 7 days, and I'm not done yet. So you can go pretty far if you hurry.
Well, I guess so.
Gentlemen, we are just out of time. I did save those emails. There was a couple more that came in for next broadcast. But one of them, MK, I'll leave you with is, Chaka is asking, I believe it's Chaka that sent that. They're asking for your help on the Project Your Answer show. They'd like you to try and photo enhance a picture that NASA took of what some people suspect is the mothership off the rings of Saturn.
Well, I will sure be glad to try.
So we'll try to figure out how to make that happen. But, guys, we are just out of time. We've got the CBS News coming our way in about 45 seconds, and then Lee Rad from Hollywood follows that. Guys, as always, our listeners are indebted to you for your time and all of your efforts. Even though you get a lot of slings and arrows thrown at you, I think you guys are wonderful at what you do.
Good night, everybody.
Good night.